Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the main event. The Football Ramble's here. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you? Lovely to have your ears. Pete's here.
Hello.
James or Jim is here.
Hello.
Luke's also here.
All right.
There's the trio. Complete. Chaps, with Ryan Giggs recently suggesting that he might come out of international retirement if needed and called upon and all those other kind of things, who's your favourite player to have come out of international retirement? James or Jim, I'd like you to go first.
I'm going
to
go straight in with a big hitter.
Go on.
Roger Miller.
That's a fantastic start.
Because I know we talk about him a lot. I know we talk about him a lot, and we have done, especially lately. But, I mean, he was in his 40s in one of the World Cups, living on Reunion Island. Right? Well, I only know where that is.
No, he was 38.
Shower curtain's got a map of the world on it.
He was 38 for the 90 World Cup.
All right, well, still. That's old.
Yeah,
he was possibly older, as we've discussed before. Don't know if he genuinely was that age.
Scored four goals in that
tournament. Yeah, I mean, he was an absolute revelation, wasn't he? And,
that is a good one.
Glory
be. Set the bar very high there, James.
Pete, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm a massive fan of the Peruvian team. So, as you all well know, I'm slightly Peruvian. Norberto Solano.
Because he's still going, isn't he? I forgot about that.
He's one of those people who didn't really quite fancy the sort of 10,000 mile round trip. So I'll retire, I think.
He fell out with the
coach. They play at altitudes as well.
And then he came back. Imagine playing a trumpet at altitude.
He's a beautiful boy.
You know he isn't. In the he looks a bit like Pele, I think. But
a little bit.
He's got a sort of like kind of crumpled face.
There it is.
Always
again.
Gets a laugh.
Yeah, it's got to be said.
Humorous. Touchstone. Or maybe Edwin van der Sar. He came back not that long ago, did he?
You're going for Solano.
All right, I'll go for Solano.
Either way, it's not as good as Roger Miller. Luke.
Solano. I'm going to go for the man who doesn't really even seem to know what retirement is, let alone take it seriously, Henrik Larsson.
That's right.
Ooh, competition.
Oh, I'm retired. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Oh, it's a big tournament. I'm back.
He's a tease, isn't he, Larsson?
Yeah. So Euro 2004, he originally retired after... I believe
scoring a beautiful
was it not? No, it was World Cup 2002, I think.
Was it? Is he before
that's right. He came back for 2004, didn't he? Because he's done this a few times.
He definitely came back for Euro 2008 as well.
We've put him in the pro in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he's definitely come back for 2008 as well, didn't he?
I think his telly's broken. My telly's broken. I don't know where to get it fixed.
Has he not been checking? Has he not been checking teletext?
No.
He's actually manager of like a Swedish second division team now, Larsson.
That's right.
Probably just on the side though. Imagine still playing.
I only do this. Until they come and put me back for a major tournament, and then I have to go.
It would hurt me and annoy me if he was a terrible manager.
Yeah, I don't know how
he's one of those players that it would depress me.
Well, at least he's starting at a sort of sensible position.
It's like
managing his hometown club, where he's
like
the all-time top scorer when they're just about to go down.
Like just in Edinburgh, he's managing. Is it Rushden & Downs?
Is he?
He's very very low.
Well, Larsson's at Bulls Landskrona, I think they're called.
Good.
Yeah, well...
So that'd be mine, Henrik Larsson.
I'm going to go for Juan Roman Raquel, mate.
Oh, God, it's heavy hitters today.
Yeah. Here's hoping he does
and
it again.
And Nobby Solano.
Yeah. Well, we've said before, we'd still like to see Romy playing at international level, but because of the two biggest egos in the football, his and Maradona's, these not. But yeah, wonderful coming out of retirement. I think he scored two goals in his... first game back, two free kicks against Chile.
Nice. Good. Scoring more than one free kick in a game is brilliant.
Yeah.
That's great stuff. I mean, Riquelme, like you said, here's hoping he stages another comeback. It's not going to happen, though, is it?
Not while Maradona's still alive.
No.
So, good to happen.
Yeah. Any day.
Who knows? You know something we know.
He's not a figure of fitness, is he?
No.
Points. I'm going to. No, I'm not really. James, of course.
Good. Yeah.
I knew that straight away.
Roger, that's a round of applause from Luke.
Yeah,
he knows. Round more like four or five claps.
He knows.
I'm not sure how many you need for a round.
James, he knows he's been beaten.
Yeah, he does.
Sometimes you've got to hold your hands up, James.
Indeed.
We can all agree it doesn't happen very often. Yeah. But tonight it has.
Can I just do that little dance around the microphone?
Oh, yeah, you should. Yeah,
he actually not enough room.
Yeah.
Gyrating hips.
Let's move on. That's like an Alan Parry.
You said that as an aside.
Well, no, I felt like a radio commentator. I had to kind of give the listeners.
Luckily for James, there was a table between us there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I may not have been able to control myself.
Well, Chelsea couldn't control themselves, could they, against Aston Villa?
No.
Seven goals.
They did it quite effectively, you might argue.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Seven goals. Frank Lampard got a haul.
A haul, an official haul.
Haul.
Great stuff.
He's my captain on Fantasy Football League. Thank you very much.
I've not had a look for such a long time. How are we getting on?
I'm rubbish.
So Frank and I, you know, doing the business on the weekend.
Frank Lampard scored something like 20 goals for the last six seasons.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's well on his way to having his best scoring season this season, even though he had a little bit of a lull earlier in the season.
Yeah. I reckon he should be on the plane.
I think he probably will be. Yeah.
7-1 against Villa, the Championes.
Yeah.
Definitely not the Championes.
I predicted that to be a draw.
Yeah, well, with Pompey aside, Chelsea had a bit of a sort of dip.
Yeah.
And seven goals against Villa, that is just unbelievable. It was 1-0 at one point as well.
It was 1-0 at half time, wasn't it? Oh, no, it wasn't.
That half hour in, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
A lot of Celtic fans want Amat O'Neill to quit or be fired so that he can go back to Celtic.
Is that right? Yeah, of course.
On the Facebook group.
The Football Ramble Facebook group.
Let's talk of Paul Lambert for Celtic as well. People are up for he's done a fantastic job.
What about Roy Keane?
Yeah, well, there's another one. Yeah.
But back in the Premier League, Arsenal lost some ground.
Yes, they did.
Very annoyingly, I'd imagine.
Kevin Phillips pops up.
It
was such a crappy goal.
It was, wasn't it?
250th in league football, Pete.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't argue with that, can you? What, Wenger swore? Did you hear this in the press conference?
Oh, that's right, did you?
I heard. What word did he say? Mied.
No, he said the F word.
Did he?
Just in case.
Speaking of Cahill, when I saw that he scored that equaliser late doors, I actually found out, I didn't know this, I'm not sure if you know this, you boys, he won the European Golden Boot.
With Sunderland.
We've done the European Golden Boot in the Dean Winters Hall of Fame.
What an achievement.
You got 36.
It's an incredible achievement, isn't it?
I'm annoyed at you for that.
Really annoyed at you.
He actually hit him with a pen.
His award is in the
Hall of Fame. No, it was a shame for us. I mean, lots of people seem to sort of say, "Oh, the title challenge is over now." I don't think.
If Chelsea and Man United draw, then it's right. It's open again, very, very much so. Because I mean, we've even said on the show this season that people write off teams so often, and then it can only take one result just to change things, and they're right back in there. I maintain I don't think Arsenal will win the league. Just think Man United and Chelsea are better, and I think the points that Arsenal need the other sides to drop. I just sort of, the games are ebbing away for that to happen, so it's getting less and less likely. But I mean, it's kind of an encouraging performance, season-wise for Arsenal. Yeah, I don't mean the games are an encouraging performance. I just mean that Arsenal are even here, and a lot of people were just sort of writing them off before the season has even started.
Well, the fact that Arsenal are where they are and still with them, even with a decent shout as well, is a massive indication of Wenger's methods, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah. But I mean, the fact that they haven't won a trophy for a while, people sort of jump on the back of that. But imagine if they were to win the title this season, they come from nowhere.
That's right.
And you're right about what you say about people being written off, because I can remember about seven games into the season, people were going, "Oh, so and so's lost two games."
Yeah,
it's a big title decider.
Mental.
And I know a lot of that's propagated by Sky and stuff like that to try and get people to watch, but it is a little bit silly.
Yeah, West Ham are in trouble.
They are.
Nice goal from Fuller.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Did you see? I think it was on Match of the Day.
Ricky Villa.
The Ricky Villa goal. It's the same goal. Yeah, it's incredible.
And they're both called Ricky.
Mm. So,
apparently, the West Ham players have been given 3 days off, and Zola's gone back to Italy.
Yeah, well, he went to Sardinia, didn't he? But he's made the decision that he's going to stay on there, which is.
Yeah, he said that he's definitely going to stay.
It's like they're on a break. you know, West Ham and Zola. You know, yeah, maybe thinking about seeing other people, but they're not sure if it's going to work out that way. I saw Julian Dix was on Sky Sports. Oh, it's the players. They're just being lazy.
Yeah.
I'd do whatever he told me, frankly. So if you are listening and you play for West Ham, buck up.
What I need to do is have a massive fight.
You know, apparently, after he retired, Julian Dix took up playing golf, but he basically stopped because he got so frustrated with it, he'd like regularly smash up his clubs.
He was probably decent. He's probably decent.
He lives in Spain, I think.
Really?
Does he live in Spain? I think he lives in Spain.
Might do.
He certainly used to hate talking about football. I know that. I've said that on more than one occasion. He sort of gets quite upset if someone wants to talk to him about... Because he runs a bar, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He had a pub for a while as well.
That sounds right.
He does not. He does not look like a man whose name should be Julian Dix, does he?
No. Like Julian Dix running a pub name. Just feels right.
Yeah.
But he had to quit through injury, I think.
He did. Yeah. Forget he was at Liverpool for a season as well. Yeah.
Oh bloody hell! Yeah. So he was. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So
he had a free kick on him as well.
Yeah, and a penalty.
I tell you what,
and a fist.
If you
two fists,
called him Julie Two Fists.
Yeah.
He should have played for England for the fact. Bring him on for the penalty shootouts.
Yeah. Or to take out one of the best players, like, yeah. Get sent off.
No, but like his penalties were superb.
Yeah, they were.
The keeper just sort of thought, I know where it's.
Well, really, really aggressive.
Like. Lampard got a couple of nice penalties, didn't he?
He did.
One was an absolute belter, wasn't it?
Belter.
Yeah.
Do you know who takes a decent penalty as well? Jimmy Bullard.
He does, actually.
Always top corner.
Yeah.
One thing that annoyed me a little bit this weekend, and I don't
tell us, Luke, tell us.
I don't know if I'm just being overreacting a little bit.
Probably.
But the demise of players not celebrating against their old club.
Bullard did.
Crouch did it. Crankyard did it.
Crankyard, not so much.
Bullard earned some massive boos, though, didn't he?
Yeah, but.
He did get some boos. And Roy Hodgson said, well, they're allowed to boo him because he left.
Well, a lot of Fulham fans don't like Bullard very much because he sort of.
We regularly get taken to task on it. Facebook group, don't we, for liking him.
Torres scored a great goal. One of the goals of the season, for me.
Beautiful.
Absolute beauty.
You should never score from there, surely. How do you make a football do that?
I hate when people say that. He's got no right. Well, he has.
He's got no right. His mate's over on the far side. He should be passing out. He's got no right.
There was a kid. Sorry, mate. There was a kid who was a really, really good footballer when we were young. And his dad used to love giving it the bat. His dad, his sort of dad always down the pitch, playing.
Yeah.
And this other kid scored an amazing goal. Like, he ran from his own like half in like a cup final, which is at our local stadium, sort of non-league stadium, and that sort of thing. And he ran the whole team right and chipped the keeper. It's an amazing goal. He's on VHS video. He's
Daly and Atkinson,
that sort of thing. Yeah. And on the video, you can hear the other guy's dad saying to him after the game, "Well, it's a good job you scored that, because my Jonathan was wide open." I seriously said that. It's amazing.
Oh dear. Going back to Andy Gray once again, the Torres' second goal, when he sort of calmly just...
That's a lovely finish.
Yeah. Put the ball... He was describing the action, he went, and as Torres sort of stroked it in, he went, "And this is what we mean about calm finishing." Who?
Yeah.
You've never... Stop I've never me. Heard him talk... This is what we mean.
He's part of the calm finishing board. They work out what's a calm finisher.
And this is what he wants. And he gets the ball. And he... It's almost like Andy Gray's taking credit for it. Pisses me off.
Do you know what he said, which will make you even worse? I'm not sure if you heard this.
He wasn't slagging me off, was
you
he?
Would have said, yeah, he slagged me off. He said, in the last words, you know that really self-indulgent half hour they do at the end of the song?
It's like Jerry Springer's last word, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got a little...
And now for my final thought.
Yeah. Take care of yourselves and each other.
Don't have nightmares.
And your mate.
Yeah. Andy Gray actually said this. He actually said that he hopes that Arjen Robben's injured for the Champions League game against Man United on Tuesday.
That's a disgraceful thing to
Absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? And you don't want to see. All of
He's
a sudden.
A great player, Robin. I mean, imagine where Robin would be sort of considered amongst the top players in the world if he was injury free more often.
Well, he's a James, superb
the
player.
The amount of times Andy Gray has said stuff like in like a Champions League game, and you want to see the best players around on a night like this. Oh, unless they happen to not be playing for an English club, you mean? Yeah. You don't want them to play. Absolutely disgraceful.
Unless
scene.
Let's not forget he is Scottish.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's move on from terrible blokes. Gary Cook.
Yay.
Everton.
Links write themselves, don't they?
Simple pullback and reveal. I like it.
What are we talking about now, then? Everton have written to him. Now, this was during Everton's win at Manchester City.
Email him.
They're pen pals.
Yeah.
Probably a fact.
When they won 2-0. Yeah. Roberto Mancini showing a rare bit of...
Moyes would punish him.
Insanity.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking submission holds. You know what I mean? He could do what he wanted to.
The only thing I'll say about Moyes is that he would take it down to the gutter.
Don't wear a scarf, for one, to fight with Moyes.
Moyes kind of...
Shreddy with it.
Garrot here.
He looks a bit bewildered. You know, like, when like a really big kid, like in the playground, a little lad comes along and, like, punches it. He's just like... Do you realise what you're doing?
You know, you just flicked me in the face with your hair.
You really want this?
With your really well conditioned hair.
Everton. Well, not only were they a little ruckus on the sidelines. Apparently, upstairs in the football club, Gary Cook was
having
the
Gary Cook.
The Gary Cook.
Lee Gary Cook.
In case you're getting confused with someone else. In case you're getting confused with Gareth Cook.
There was a little bit of argy bargy. Everton have written to Gary Cook, who, of course, is the Manchester City chief executive, to demand an explanation following the incident which happened when Everton went to Eastlands and won 2-0.
It all kicked off with
George Downing, who's apparently a successful businessman who's well respected.
He's Evertonian, isn't he?
That's right. And apparently, when the Everton fans were singing, you know, because they were 2-0 up, the game was petering out, Downing started joining in with the songs, but he was still in like the box where they all sit, you know, box.
I don't know Gary Cook, but I can imagine he's a very bad loser.
Well, apparently he started directing one of the choruses at Cook. This is what he's in his director's box and he's giving it the big.
I hope he went, "You're not at Nike now, pal."
Yeah, well,
this is big boy shit.
Taking Nike Town down to Chantown.
Old Gary Cook's not having that.
What did he do? Ask them to leave.
Well, there was a little bit
actually.
Was
I bet he got someone else to ask him to leave.
Gary Cook's back in the.
That is really annoying, though, isn't it? I mean, we've all been on the end of fans being annoying.
Gary Cook.
But part of me thinks it's amazing that some bloke turns up to Gary Cook's director's box and starts singing at him. But then you do, as you say, James, to look at it from a balanced view, that is a naughty thing to do.
I reckon I've met like 5 Man City fans since we've been doing this show, and all of them think Gary Cook's a penis.
He's an embarrassment for them, isn't he? It's awful. You don't want someone associated with your club that's constantly putting his foot in his mouth, because he's representing you in a way. If it's a club of a lot of new money like City, because there's going to be a lot of people immediately just getting annoyed with the transfer rumours and stuff like that. And it's the same thing happened to Chelsea, you know. It just sort of, you don't want to be tarnished by Gary Cook.
He's out Kenyan in Kenya.
He is, absolutely.
It's worth pointing out that Gary Cook's actually embarrassing to a load of sheikhs who don't know anything about football. They're embarrassed by him. Even then, they have to pull him into the office every so often and say, "Come on."
It's true. Gary Cook has had to have a meeting with those people, like with the subject of the meeting being "stop being a dick." That should never have to happen to you as a human being.
Weren't you there at the meeting last week about Luke? Johnston's Paint Trophy Final.
Who was there?
Pete was there.
I was there. It was £34. I was in the Carlisle end, and a colourful racist characters in the Carlisle.
Was it really?
Yeah. It was 30 minutes before I heard an anti-black man chant. Wow.
You've been serious?
That is early.
That is terrible. It's always too early.
You do occasionally hear it, but it's like... It came very early, considering... It's 2010. But there was a man dressed as Elvis, which was a lot of fun. He was running up and down, and there was a slightly less successful man dressed as a blue sort of strong man. He was sort of like a strongman caveman sort of kind of fella with sort of like a leopard skin sort of.
These people
dress
you were
on.
With or people you saw with?
No, this is people that we saw there.
Racists and superheroes.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was an enjoyable spectacle, but I mean, just Carlisle just weren't at the rest at all.
The defending was terrible.
The defending was awful. They won one header all match, and that was for their goal.
Southampton won 4-1.
Congratulations to them.
They just didn't have any strikers. Carlisle, bless them. They had a couple little cup tied. That was the problem, I think.
Oh, did they?
One from Stoke and one from somewhere else. They both couldn't play, which is it's annoying for a final because you kind of want the strongest teams. But it was Carlisle just weren't very good.
I saw it's the FA Vars Trophy, which is the end of the season.
Mm.
Yeah,
a couple of years ago when Stevenage Borough won it. It was a great game. It's good to see those. You know, non-big Cup finals at Wembley.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
They're great games as well.
I mean, because there's if you look at the amount of people were there, I mean, it was like, what was it, 80?
Oh, it was fantastic.
I think it was the biggest mobilisation of Southampton fans ever in the history of the club.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a testament to them, really.
I mean, look, more so than the Cup final where they lost to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Wow.
What I love about those finals, though, is the fact that those supporters aren't used to being at Wembley.
And Carlisle, they've been there like five times in the last
Oh, no, so they have.
Playoff finals and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but they lost. But I mean, they've come to the final of this like pretty constantly. I mean, they've won once at Cardiff, I think, but all the other times they've lost. Imagine Wembley being your bogey ground when you live in Carlisle.
But I think the point I'm making is that they don't have that many what you'd call big games.
No,
in a way to Old Trafford,
like
watching them when they first started, they clearly weren't used to using such a big pitch because they bunched like school kids.
Oh, really?
Both teams, it was ridiculous. They were just in both, like they were all in one quarter of the pitch. It was weird.
Is that the first time you've been to Wembley?
It is.
What do you think of it?
I mean, it looks incredible. Obviously, I think I think it would be incredible. You know, when we went to the New Camp,
yeah,
and we stood at the very top. Would you call it the west stand? If you climbed at the top of that, I think that would look absolutely
magnificent. Yeah, I stood at the back.
I was very much at the on the bottom tier and stuff. But
it's a great stadium.
It is. Obviously, it is.
It's in two parts for me. The pitch side, so actually in the arena, is superb, I think, in terms of you get a great view wherever you are. If you're on the right side of the stadium, you've got the arch going over, which is a spectacle. But the gripes with it are that behind the scenes, it's like a fucking airport departure lounge. It's so soulless. It's got these restaurants and these food things, which are ridiculously expensive. And also getting to and getting from Wembley is a chore.
I've not actually been there, but I get the impression it's sort of like a football version of the O2 Arena.
Yeah, very much so. James, I'll be going there next month for the fourth time as a Pompey fan in 2 years, so you know, it's like a home from home for me, you know. I understand as an Arsenal fan you wouldn't quite have had that.
That's a dig, isn't it? Hey,
did someone say banter? Yeah. Sound the banter alarm.
I envy you. I really do.
Oh dear.
Stephen Taylor
Didn't have a good day out the other day.
In training,
he's feeling a bit betrayed by Newcastle United, and he thinks he has no future at the club, reports are suggesting.
And why would this be, Marcus?
This is because he had his jaw broken by his teammate Andy Carroll recently.
One of my most hated players.
Yeah. Andy Carroll? Pete doesn't like Stephen Taylor.
No, I don't like Stephen Taylor. Let's have a fight.
I'll give you an arm wrestle. I'll paint my hand into Stephen Taylor, and you can paint your hand into Andy Carroll and we'll have a fight. Regardless of personal opinions of players aside, you know, put yourself in this position.
You've had
your jaw broken by a teammate at the club, and there's been no action taken on the teammate. He's still playing.
What I'd say is, why is that? I mean, nobody's come out and said anything. Why is Andy Carroll still playing?
He's not getting involved. He refuses to get involved.
But which sort of begs the question that there's probably a little bit more than... Obviously, there would be repercussions if you punch another player. And basically, he's on the recovery trail. You know what I mean? That's going to set him back. And if he wants to leave the club, he wants to leave the club.
Why is this...
Anyway? Well, not for quite a while. They need to sell it. No, next season
he's out.
It just strikes me as being like a... like a sort of Aldi version of the Wayne Bridge rubbish, but it's just kind of like, why is nothing being said? Why isn't this out in the public domain? It just strikes me as being, there's obviously a little bit more to this.
A girl, apparently. Andy Carroll's already been busted loads.
Yeah, yes. Carroll's currently on bail.
But
Stephen Taylor's declined to take part in a police investigation into the incident.
That is really unusual.
If he wants to leave the club, why isn't he got involved in it with the police investigation? I don't buy all this. It's because he wants the best for Newcastle United. He's not that much of a club man. To be honest, the piece that's taken from the Observer. What's her name? Taylor. What's her first
name? Oh, Louise Taylor.
Taylor. She hates Newcastle United with a passion. I mean, psychologically, I don't know what Newcastle did to her. She gets very upset about anything that.
Maybe it's her.
Maybe she's the one being getting text messages. Classic. I think the thing is, OP, if you think there's more to it than that, and this goes on behind the scenes, then that's fine. But I mean, it's just from a layman's point of view and from an outsider's point of view, it's a worrying thing when sort of, you know, practicality and oh, he's scoring goals, so he's got to play for us.
Thing is, we've
takes
got,
over principle. Thing it's is, annoying. Got, it thing
no, I don't mind that for a second because he wasn't scoring goals like a couple of months ago. He scored a few now, but you know, right, like okay. Nolan's more of a goal scorer than he is this season. Lovenkrantz is scoring more goals than him at the moment.
Fair enough.
We've got Shaw Ramiobi in the wings, who is a better striker for all his bloody faults, you know what I mean? And Andy Carroll's certainly not a Premiership striker.
That's
so
put into perspective how much you hate Stephen Taylor.
Yeah.
Shaw Ramiobi again.
Well, it's disappointing because Stephen Taylor, I think Newcastle's defence is great at the moment. I'd like to see Stephen Taylor back. It would only strengthen the team. There'd be a pretty good battle for the centre back positions and stuff.
Because he was just back from injury, wasn't he?
He's not back yet. No, he's the.
He's not now, is he?
No, he's not now, but I mean.
Luton 8, Hayes and Yedding 0.
Good result.
7-0 at half time. What the hell were they doing in the second half?
Lazy. Slack.
Their work's done. Hayes and Yedding had a decent cup run not so long ago, I seem to remember.
Yeah, that's Luton Town's biggest win since the Second World War.
It would have been written as 8 if the video printer was still going as well.
Yeah, Kevin Gallen. He's in.
Oh, Kevin Gallen, yeah. What did he get? A couple?
Got a couple, yeah. Last weekend, Luton beat Ebbsfleet 6-1 as well. Fine. And all six of them were in the second half, so maybe they're sort of trying to balance it out. I don't know.
Just trying to get away early. If we can get this wrapped up on an hour, can we just go?
Yeah. It's like an exam. If you finish, you can leave.
Are you ever allowed to declare a football match?
I believe so.
Just forget it.
I can't imagine the other captain agreeing to it.
Sepp's trying to bring it in,
yeah.
Gentlemen, I'm sure you're as overjoyed as I am to know that Sven Goran Eriksson will be managing Ivory Coast at the World Cup.
Incredible.
The balding smoothie is back.
The balding smoothie.
He says he wants England in the final, doesn't he? He's dreaming.
He wants to try ladies on another continent.
Well, incredibly tough start for him. I think his first game is Portugal, but he could get revenge for 2004. And then his second game is Brazil, revenge for 2002. And then North Korea,
revenge for when he loses the job in the future.
James, you've traditionally been fiercely against managers, African managers being sacked going into competitions when they've qualified to get in there.
Yeah, well, it does seem incredibly harsh, doesn't it?
I agree with you. I think it's hard.
Because there was talk of Hiddink doing it on a sort of part-time basis, wasn't it? It is going to be interesting because it's Sven to see if he's there, you know.
But Hiddink's got a bit of a track record for coming in to jobs and just immediately transforming the teams,
Definitely. Where Sven's gone the other way recently.
Sven's got a sort of a reputation for coming in immediately womanising.
Immediately transforming the accounts.
Well.
Apparently the other candidates were Mark Hughes and some reports said Bernd Schuster.
Bernd Schuster, Real Madrid. Well, Sven's got there.
Yeah. Well, they've got a got a very, very tough group. I know we've said this before, but I didn't realise this until today. If they do qualify, it will likely be as the runners up, and they'll likely get Spain. So it's really harsh.
It is harsh,
but it is very harsh in the Ivory Coast because in 2006, their first two games were Argentina and then Holland.
Yeah,
and they gave a pretty decent account. They lost both those
they've
games 2-1.
Got a good
2-1.
Team,
but in 2006, they were stronger. I'm wanting to say that than they are now, and it was a real shame for them because. Yeah, no, had they have been had a nicer start, or at least had who was the other team in that group? They had Argentina,
was
Holland.
It Romania, was it?
No, it was Serbia, Montenegro.
Oh yeah.
You know, perhaps if they'd have maybe got off to a winning start against, I mean, that's no mean feat either.
No.
Then it was a real shame. And then this time round, bang, they've been hit with a tough one again.
But they got Sven.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
They'll definitely get to the quarterfinal.
Yeah. Well, a statement said that he will lead the team at the World Cup, where his objective is to ensure an honourable participation. And it will obviously be difficult.
Didn't Ivory Coast sack their manager because of poor performance in the African Cup of Nations?
Even though
they qualified.
Quarterfinals they weren't happy with.
I think it's going to be a bit of a strain on all of the African sides, considering they've had the Cup of Nations in January.
Of course.
They've played a lot more games.
And so many of them play in Europe now that there's a lot of games to get through at a club level.
I'm surprised they've gone for Sven, because Sven is not... he's not a disciplinarian. He's not a guy who will come in and go, right, this is what we've got to do.
Yeah.
He's quite...
Quite laissez-faire,
very
conservative as well.
That's right. Whereas I'd have thought maybe Mark Hughes would have been better.
Mark Hughes would be mental taking over the Ivory Coast, wouldn't he?
And it would be brilliant. I'm thinking of myself and my own entertainment.
Oh, right, of course.
You should go back to Wales, Mark Hughes.
You reckon?
Well, yeah. Just to live.
Well, just in general.
Like Ryan Giggs come out of retirement.
I mean, Sven obviously didn't do very well with Mexico. His record was played 13, won 6, drew 1, lost 6 with Mexico.
He took over from Hugo Sanchez, didn't he, Eriksen? Yeah. And yeah, he didn't do a great job there.
Well, it's such a huge change in culture, though, isn't it? Like, Mexican football, it was Man City to Mexico, wasn't it? I mean, it's, you're going to need some time to adjust to that, I'm sure. I mean, if you're a brilliant and amazing manager, as someone like Hiddink is, you should be able to go around and do that. But maybe Sven doesn't have that kind of.
At least he'll have. He'll at least been as a European man who's managing in different countries around Europe. He will have experience. He'll know. At least he'll know what Drogba, Kalou, Touré, all the other guys are like, because he'll have seen them play a lot. So it's not though he's going to an African country full of unknowns. Yeah, true. Even play in Europe, do you know what I mean? Very much a world game, though.
Well, hopefully he'll have the respect from a lot of those players, because he has managed at World Cups and in some of the top leagues.
Well, maybe it's
the
experience they need, I don't know, you never know.
What we need to do is go 1-0 up and panic.
Against 10.
Very true. Staying with the World Cup, I've got some bad news for you.
Go on.
You know, as Englishmen, we hope England do well, but Pelé said that he reckons England might make it to the last four.
Why do people still ask Pelé what he thinks?
I don't think they do, mate. I don't think they do. That means we'll either win it or we'll do terrible.
Yeah. It's like he's a magic eight ball. Just shake Pelé up. Let's see what crap he comes out with. Jesus.
He wants Ronaldinho to go to the Cup, which I think we can all agree with. Yeah. But he says that Ronaldinho could have a calming effect on Brazil.
Yeah.
What sense?
Getting them pissed. The thing is,
his experience.
One thing we can draw from that is now that England definitely will not get to the semi-final.
And Ronaldinho won't go to the World Cup.
No, exactly, yeah.
It probably won't even happen now.
The World Cup won't happen. Yeah.
Maradona, though, has been... we were praising Messi in the last few weeks, as I'm sure anybody with a serviceable pair of eyes who can watch football will as well, for all these hat-tricks and wonderful performances. And Maradona's been asked a lot about Messi, and... he's saying, you know, how come you've not been getting the best out of him from the national team and one thing or another. And Maradona said, you know, if I have to change the system for his good, then I will. But I think
every week.
Yeah. But he went on to say, but I think the system that we have and the players we have, all that he needs to do is explode, and surely he'll do that at the World Cup. So basically, when he's been asked, look, you're not doing this. Messi's not clicking in this system, and he's clearly your best player. Are you going to change that? Well, I will change it, but really all that needs to happen is we'll do exactly what we've been doing.
And he needs to step up.
And surely he'll do that at the World Cup.
What's the system? The merry-go-round of players? I can't figure out the Argentinian system.
It's called the lucky dip system. It's very, very underused in world football.
But you make a very good point, Marcus. He is saying that, isn't he? He's saying, I think it will be okay because it's the World Cup. And Maradona sort of believes in that kind of magic. In a way, it's quite British. It's very sort of it's all about passion and
but that's what he's all about.
Thinking about the games.
Argentina are similar to England that way. They're fiercely patriotic, aren't they?
They
enjoy steak and chips.
Exactly.
Very true.
You know, it's no coincidence that Messi's best performances for Argentina have been when Riquelme's been playing.
Yeah.
And Riquelme's now not playing. And Messi's is likely to play it as part of a two up top of Higuain. And is that the best position for him? If it were me, I would just build the entire team.
Well, of course.
Modelled on the same system that they play at Barcelona.
Absolutely. I'd have
have the players
Messi
to do
right,
it.
Yeah. Higuain in the middle, Aguero on the left. Maybe Tevez. It's
a variation of that.
Or Di Maria, maybe, or something. Yeah. You know.
Cambiasso in that team.
Yeah.
But it's not as if Maradona himself didn't profit from a team building themselves around one player. That's the annoying.
He should know,
He is a strangely defensively minded manager, isn't he? How much he loves Mascherano.
Well, Maradona did say, we believe in him to the death. It was slightly worrying. The man's capable of anything. He did also say, with regards to, because we mentioned before on the show, and a number of people have mentioned this, that people think that he's trying to hold back Messi from taking his kind of crown as the god of football in Argentina or whatever.
Decent young footballers are now the new Messi rather than the new Maradona.
He's not going to like that. Yeah. Well, he said, if anyone surpasses me, I want him to be Argentine. If Messi does well, I win.
It's ironic that you say that you consider Maradona to be a defensive-minded manager and stuff, but whereas Argentina are unquestionably weak at the back. That's the weakest point of their squad.
That's right.
Players they've got at the back are, you know, appalling.
Yeah, well, he seems to be restricting them up front. It's a real lack of adventure.
One. Yeah.
It's Premier League time. Real won 3-2 in the Madrid derby.
They were one down as well, weren't they? To Reyes.
Yeah.
Reyes opened the scoring.
Another lovely one who celebrated against his old club.
Yeah.
Lovely little flick on from Aguero for that as well. Yeah. Everyone saw it.
Lovely little flick on.
That was literally a flick on. Couldn't think of anything that didn't make sense.
Barca won 1-0 in Mallorca. Ibra. Yeah, Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Not many people. The only the second team, I believe, this season to go to Mallorca and win.
Ooh,
yeah. They've won every other home game.
As well.
They've not even drawn one.
They hit the bar twice, didn't they? Did you see Ibra did a pass with his back?
That was amazing.
Did
yeah. Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Really odd.
Once again, players that sometimes we think, oh, is he having the best of times? Goes out and murks us. Well, actually, no, he hasn't.
We've always backed him. And I think Ibra will get 20 goals this season, which isn't bad.
He's got 15 in the league at the moment, which is two less than Cristiano. Two less than Cristiano Ronaldo.
Okay, that's a telling statistic, that is.
A telling statistic.
What is really interesting is, obviously there's a lot of interest in the Pichichi every season, probably more so in Spain than here. And I think it's Marca talking about Ronaldo and how he's going to get it over Messi. But Higuain's got loads more than Ronaldo. Yeah. It's like, he's in the same team, you know. You're backing the wrong horse.
El Pepita.
In Serie A, Roma beat Inter.
Yeah,
and go into second at 1 point behind Inter now.
Can I say I fancy Roma for the title.
I'd love them to nip in and get.
Well, I mean, it's also worth mentioning that Milan failed to take advantage again and drew at home to lowly Lazio. They don't want it.
No, they don't. Roma seems to be the only team with any sort of momentum.
Yeah, it's odd. Milan have just they've had at home.
Yeah, so many.
Oh my goodness!
You know, did you see Daniel De Rossi's celebration when Tony scored the winner against Inter?
Yeah. He's swinging on the bar.
He's not jumping up and down like he could control himself. Yeah. He could round down with a crossbar, swinging.
The goalkeeper just looking really annoyed at him, celebrating in his face. This is what I'm talking about with the guy sort of shouting at Gary Cook. It's that sort of thing.
Before De Rossi swung on the crossbar, he actually went completely mental. Yeah. Like he couldn't control himself. He's like in
didn't know what to do, did he?
He didn't even score it.
There were some great scenes at the Stadio Olimpico that night.
It's good to see Luca Toni scoring again as well.
Yeah.
So I had a chat with my mate about the Stadio Olimpico with the running track around it. And he was saying he prefers a running track around the pitch because it's more sort of dramatic.
But when they score, they can jump home.
But I sort of think it's too far away.
Yeah.
Well, like at Hampden when Kenny Miller scored in the cup final recently. It was a League Cup final against
St Mirren,
was it? And he wanted to run and celebrate with the fans. But by the time he got there, everyone sort of moved on. You know what I mean?
Sat back down.
That's right. Well, I mean, Milan and Inter have really let Roma into the title race. In March, Inter, this is in the league, have only won once in March. They've drawn twice and lost twice. Milan have only won once in March. They've drawn three times and lost once. Whereas Roma in the league have won three times and drawn twice in March. And one of those draws was against Milan. Roma have really come back. Well, they're really into the second, for crying out loud. You know.
Well, like James said, I think the momentum is telling. And this sort of stage of the season, if you get into that habit of winning.
Yeah.
I think it's been so long since Milan have won the title that they've sort of forgotten how to do it.
All to play for.
Mm.
Following on from last week's chat about Juventus and more specifically Felipe Melo, when we were saying he's had a really bad time there, I was unaware that in 2009
he had the award bestowed upon him.
Yeah, I think is a more accurate reflection on the incident. He won the award, which is called the Bidone d'Oro, which I think you'll find is an excellent pronunciation.
I think it's Bidone d'Oro, but carry on.
Bidone d'Oro.
Yeah.
Yeah, that as well.
Depends where you're from in Italy, Mark.
That's right, yeah. You get the picture.
Mario Land, by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Which is Italian for, I suppose, golden bin. Yeah. Or that's a garbage can for our American brothers and sisters. Yeah. It's a tongue-in-cheek prize which is given to the worst footballer in Serie A each year.
It's an incredibly rude award.
Yeah.
Felipe Melo cannot be the worst player in Serie A. No. It must be the most disappointing player.
Well, we've got the list of winners here.
We do, yeah.
It's interesting that you say that, Luke, because, I mean, going back from 2009. In 2008 it was Ricardo Quaresma. In 2007 and 2006 it was Adriano. The year before that, Christian Vieri. Before that it was Nicola Legratella. And before that, Rivaldo. So obviously he's just someone who's like a sort of big target to be shot down almost. Who do you think would get it here this season?
Luke?
Oh, come on.
I thought you meant out of the four of us.
Well, undoubtedly Luke out of the four of us, but from the Premier League.
I would go for...
I'd probably go Veron.
Anyone who's in Nugent gets a punt.
I think it'd probably be Lucas, because someone who sort of just gets a lot of shit off of fans.
Yeah.
I mean, or in 2006 and 2007's case, the player with the worst mental problems in Adriano's case.
Drunk
a little
player.
Bit hard.
Yeah. I'm Gary Lineker and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Emails.
It is. He's not wrong. I would really love it, actually, if James, you started.
Oh, I'd love that as well.
Yeah.
Should we do it?
Let's Do it.
Let's go.
There.
Okay, Ramble Force. Ho! First off, long time listener, first time mailer. Always wanted to say that. That's nice. Like he's from an 80s action film.
Yeah.
Wanted to drop you a line to add to your quickly growing catalogue of strange things said in football stands.
Oh, I like these ones.
They're good, aren't they?
Yeah.
My story comes from this year's Super Classico replay in Buenos Aires last Thursday. I'm a Leeds fan working in Buenos Aires, and I was lucky enough to get a ticket from a Boca fan that I know.
Oh, this is Boca v River. Boca 1-2-0.
Jealous.
Yeah.
That's us, that is. We met up and entered the stadium hours before the match, watching blue and yellow fill up the Bombonera. Not only was it a truly epic atmosphere, it was a lesson in Spanish slang and football chants. The high point of which was just before the second half started, when an Argentinian soap actor dressed in full Boca strip began warming up along the touchline with a film crew. It reminded me of the classic football movie Goal, in which I think they did the same thing at Newcastle. Classic is a strong word there. The actor turned directly to our stands and clapped above his head, trying his best not to be fazed by the bottles and cups being hurled at him. I asked my amigo why everyone wasn't helping him out and cheering for the cameras like they had blatantly hoped for, but before I could answer, the guy next to me stood up, leant forward and deafened me with a shout of Concha de un loro. I immediately asked my laughing friend what he had called the soap actor. Turns out he just called him the c*** of a parrot.
That's where the eggs come out.
Yeah. Wow. It also turns out he deserved it, because another fan told me the actor was a River fan. So spare a thought for my friend Mark Amodio, who narrowly missed out on seeing this match as he had to leave just a few days prior. Also, can you get Jimmy Savile to fix it for Leeds to stop dropping points? We have no control over Savile.
I
can't really help you there. So that is from James Halliday. So thank you very much, James.
Good email.
That's wonderful stuff. Luke, you've got an email.
I have indeed. Ramble Force. Ho! Thought I would drop you a mail just to confirm your suspicions that it was indeed utterly devastating to have been a St Mirren supporter at Hampden Park on Sunday 21st of March for the recent League Cup final. Needless to say, however, the following Wednesday more than made up for any sorrow that was felt. That's right, in case anyone outside of Scotland has missed this recent media circus, Celtic were royally humped 4-0 at St Mirren Park. It was like a mass therapy session for all St Mirren supporters. People were running around the stands quite simply not knowing what to do with themselves. like Chris Kamara that time at Fratton Park. Anyway, the other reason I was getting in touch was concerning going back to Aberdeen and remember Danish manager Ebbe Skovdal, who
that's
mentioned
right.
the other week.
The, about the skirt and
yeah,
all
the,
that.
The
yeah.
skirt and that sort of stuff. On one occasion, Ebbe took Aberdeen to Parkhead with a young team and played a bizarre formation consisting of several teenagers and lots of defensive passing football. They were horsed 7-0 on the day, but when questioned on his bizarre new tactics in the post-match interview, Ebbe responded with, "The operation was a success, but the patient died." Best regards, Graham. Thanks for that, Graham.
Great stuff, Graham.
I like that a lot.
Pete, hit us with something.
How can the operation be a success if the patient died? It's
well,
strange.
If you're a murdering doctor.
Yeah.
We removed the heart.
Yeah.
Pete, what have you got for us?
I've got one from a young man by the name of Dave. Simply Dave.
All right, Dave.
Simply Dave.
Yeah. New fragrance for men.
Ramble Bums. Hey-o!
Hey-o.
That's like a hi-o gozaimasu, which is good morning in Japanese.
Huh. Yeah. Ah, konnichiwa.
Every day is a school
good
day.
Afternoon. Konbanwa is evening, I believe.
Yeah.
Pressing on.
Great news story from The Spoiler, the football website. Looks like the award for the most mental football team might be heading to Bulgaria.
Ooh.
As CSKA Sofia seem to be pulling out all the stops. The story begins at the start of the month when CSKA's local paper, the Sofia Echo, which makes me smile.
Is it really called
apparently, the Sofia Echo?
Not the Sofia Herald.
They ran an expose on the club's fantastically decrepit stadium, revealing the ground is so old it's been deemed unsafe to operate at full capacity.
Wow.
5 days later, Cameroon goalkeeper Daniel Bocono was fired from the club due to disciplinary offences after skipping one too many training sessions. Then on Sunday, an away match against Lokomotiv Mezdra was abandoned after 65 minutes when 100 CSKA fans rushed the pitch, throwing stones and whatever else they could find after going 1-0 down.
Stones from the stadium, presumably.
The next, well, it was an away match. The next day, the team was slapped with a 3-match stadium ban and a fine of £10,000, while Mezdra, despite failing to pay police to supervise the game, were only handed a 1-match penalty. On Tuesday, the Bulgarian Football Union decided to tack on an extra 3 goals to CSKA's misery, awarding Mezdra a 4-0 win. A day later, after that, 21-year-old forward Orlin Olenov was arrested by police for kidnapping and assaulting Bulgarian reality TV star Catherine Vacheva, leaving her with a broken nose and concussion. Good grief, there is more. Later that later that afternoon,
Luke's astonished.
Andy Carroll's moving there.
This pee's on Newcastle, doesn't it? Yeah. Later that afternoon, CSK president Dimitar Borisov went to the papers threatening to pull the team out of the league after manager Lorne Andone announced he was ready to leave the club over the unjust Football Association ban that they'd received. Yeah. And it's not over yet. 1,400 police officers are being stationed in downtown Sofia tomorrow in anticipation for the derby match between CSK and league champions Levski Sofia. Considering previous meetings between the two have resulted in a fan getting blown up by a bomb, they're probably right to do so.
God. They're running South America close.
That's a hell of a week.
That's like 3 months in the life of one's team.
Unbelievable.
Luke is speechless. This is
I can't believe
I've
got nothing to have. I've got nothing to offer.
He said, well, it's a great spot.
Anything we make up won't be as weird.
No,
it's a great spot from Dave. He says, thank you very much for the great podcastery.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah. So, Marcus, who is winning the now world famous Championship Manager goodie bag?
Graham.
Congratulations, Graham. It'll be on its way to you ASAP.
Now maybe you can just be St Mirren against Rangers in the final. If you lose, you can just not save it and just keep playing.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
get
yeah.
revenge.
Yeah. You can get delirious if you get too serious. It's profile time.
Thanks for that.
That's right. Chico with the profile.
Unconventional. That is
one word to describe Marcus's hygiene. That's
it. Well, it's funny because it's true.
I've been murked.
Yeah.
Murked about the body and head by Pete. We've had a couple of emails.
We've had loads. Have you seen the account? It's horrible.
Just read three.
Specifically about our entrance to the Demon at Hall of Fame this week.
Dwarf.
From there was a Laura Jones, who I believe you know,
yes,
Jones. Was at the Christmas drinks, and a young lady in San Diego called Molly Hatte, and they requested a couple of ladies.
I do that every week. No one listens.
Ladies and gentlemen, into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame this week will be Mia Hamm and Christine Lilly.
Interesting.
Mm, that's right. That's right.
Can I say curveball?
You can.
You can.
Curveball.
You have.
These two.
Curvy ball. Yeah.
Oh,
come on.
Two legends and pioneers of the ladies' game. Mm. And as Molly from San Diego said, you know, these women inspired so many girls to play the beautiful game with passion, heart and skill.
Amen to that. Mm.
And that's what the Windass Hall of Fame is all about.
It is.
It's about other things, mentalness and stuff, or craziness.
Apart from when we put the undoven in.
Come on.
Fair enough, sorry.
Christine Lilly has been a fixture on the US women's national team since 1987.
Wow. 23 years and counting.
Incredible. She's one of the world's greatest women football stars and, as we said, a veteran of the US national team. She's also the world's all-time leader in caps for international game appearances with an incredible 342 caps at international level, which is, of course, it eclipses anybody in the men's game.
That eclipses David Nugent.
By 341.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
How many matches did they play?
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's including really training in this.
At least 342.
And she's the world's second all-time leading scorer with 129 goals. And again, including the men's game.
Mm,
absolutely
wow.
incredible. And she was a left-sided midfielder or sometimes played up front as well, obviously, with the amount of goals tally. You'd imagine she was a forward-thinking player. And is a global superstar in the women's game. While she was still at high school, she was called up to the women's national team.
Wow. Crazy.
Absolutely incredible.
Rooney-esque.
How old was that then? 16?
She was 16. 16. She was 16.
Is that an unkind thing to say about a lady?
What's that?
Rooney-esque?
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
She attended the University of North Carolina between 1989 and 1992. And during her time there, she won the National Women's Soccer Championship every year. And that is no mean fact. No, anybody who knows the...
Oh, college soccer in the US, what they call it, obviously soccer, is massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. She was also a member, when she was 20 years old, of the team that won the title at the first ever FIFA Women's World Cup in China in 1991. And she started her career in Sweden, actually, in 94, because the women, they didn't have a league in America. She spent one season there before she came back to the States. And the opportunities to play regular football weren't so many in America, as we've said. So she joined the Continental Indoor Soccer League, following the footsteps of
Kizzle.
I think that was actually around at the same time as Nazzle. That survived, and I think that's actually the case.
She wasn't the first woman to play in these leagues, but it was an all-male league.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So it was an incredible thing for her to go in there. As I said, I don't think she was the first woman to play in there, but she was a huge success. And not for the novelty value or anything like that. She genuinely was a really good player in these leagues, and the fans really took to her. She was a real fan favourite, you know. And emerges as one of the league's most skilled for players, which is a remarkable achievement.
Absolutely
remarkable achievement. In 96 she won the gold medal at the Olympics, played every minute of the USA's five matches at that tournament. In 98 she set the record, the US record, for consecutive games started, 62 consecutive games she started.
International games.
That's right. Good. In February 2001, it's worth pointing out that the world's first women's professional soccer league, in which all the players were paid, that began, and she was
Wazzle.
Yeah, it works. Well, not quite. Well, Woosa, actually. I don't know why we got
Woosa.
Yeah.
If anything, that sounds more American than the Nazzle.
Woosa. she played for the Boston Breakers. She was, I think, that was the team. She was one of the founding members of that.
Now that
team
sounds more American than Nazzle.
Boston Breakers. In 2004, she became the fifth player in world history to score 100 international goals in world history.
Yeah.
You know,
great stuff.
2005, she was voted US Soccer Female Athlete of the Year. She was also voted that in 1993. 12 years after.
Maldini-esque.
Women's soccer is really, really popular in America, isn't it? I think it's more so amongst girls than boys, especially in terms of people playing them. So she will be a very, very influential figure out there. And it's easy for us to not quite understand that, if you know
that's
what I mean,
right,
because the culture
is
just so different here.
I think there'd be more inclination for the men to go across and play the more traditional US sports.
I was watching the US Mexico women's match last night. And a lot of the Mexican players, they all play for the universities. And you sort of think that kind of like the scholarship schemes
that's right
are exclusively a male preserve in the American college
they're
system,
not.
But it really isn't. Women women do so well.
I've played against some teams in America before, and some of the girls have played for the high school teams, and they're bloody decent.
Yeah.
And like, it's a real kind of, you know, and forgive me for saying this, but you kind of look at them and you think, oh, I won't go in too hard and all this kind of stuff. And then when you get put on the floor by them, you think, look at this, you know.
On a slightly related note, do you know that Mozambique distance runner called Maria Matola?
Right. Mm.
She retired from athletics. I think she was an 800 metre runner. She won the gold at the Olympics at least once. Either 800 or 1500, but she retired from athletics at the age of 38, and she now plays as a striker in the South African Women's League.
Oh, is that right?
She's banging them in as well.
Oh, that's superb.
Yeah.
Absolutely superb. In 2006, Christine Lilly finished second in FIFA Women's World Player of the Year, and she was again for the second year in a row voted US Soccer Female Athlete of the Year. She's about 35 in there.
Well, she started very young, so she's obviously been around for a very long time indeed.
Well, that's right. In 2008 she had a baby in July. She returned to the US team in December to play, coming off the bench against China. I mean, that's something that
literally none of us could do.
I wonder what, like, the recovery, because you sort of think, right, hamstring is so many weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, shin splints is like a couple of months.
Yeah.
Baby.
That is a crazy.
At least 9 months.
I'd never even thought, just considered that was obviously going to
incredible
be a problem.
When do you stop playing? Like, as soon as you find out,
exactly,
presumably.
Yeah, if you want to have a family at a certain age, then that's a.
And if she's got so many caps and she had a baby, like, like that's incredible.
Yeah. But she came back, and in 2009, I should have said earlier actually that the Women's League actually ceased to exist with the WUSA, but then in 2006, 2007, I think there was another one created, and in 2009, Lily was allocated to the Boston Breakers. Again, allocations, slightly different
set up. Like a draft sort of thing.
And bearing in mind, she had a child the previous year. She played every minute that season. It's absolutely incredible.
Crazy.
She's 38 now. She's still playing. She has 129 goals, and obviously 342 international appearances. The only player in history to play in 5 FIFA Women's World Cups. And here's some stats for you. At the end of 2007, before she got pregnant, she had played in 85% of the games the US women have ever played. Unbelievable. It really is.
Superb.
And entering 2009, this is after she'd given birth, statistically, she'd still played 78% of the matches the US had ever played. And that's after the child had come along. Absolutely unbelievable. And she's also got 103 career assists, which is second in the all-time list. And her hometown of Wilton in Connecticut, they after she won the gold medal in 96, they dedicated a day to her and honoured her with a parade. And I think when she went to return home to play for the USA in 2007, summer of 2007, the governor of Connecticut proclaimed it Christine Lilly Day. And the road sign entering her town now reads, "Welcome to Wilton, hometown of Christine Lilly, Olympic gold medalist."
Wow. Great stuff.
That is a lovely touch, isn't it? And incredible. Now,
are we clapping her in, or are we doing them together?
Oh, what do you think?
Do them together.
So as we said, she is the second all-time scorer and the second on the career assists list. Who's first on both of those fronts? It's Mia Hamm. Hmm. So
now Mia Hamm's more of a household name.
Mia Hamm is
much more well known.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, for my money, these are the big two.
Yeah, of course.
But Mia Hamm, yeah, she is probably the most recognised face of women's soccer. She's now retired, though. Okay. She's also 38. She was born in March 17th, 1972.
Just about almost 5 years after the Summer of Love.
That's right. As I said, she's retired. But I want to start from with a quote from Steffi Jones. When presenting Mia Hamm as an international ambassador for the Women's 2011 World Cup, that's an international ambassador for FIFA, of course, she said, "No other player has had a more positive impact on the women's game than Mia Hamm, as well as her incredible ability on the field. She's a wonderful team player. As I experienced firsthand when we played together at Washington Freedom in the US. She takes her status as a role model in society very seriously. I'm proud to have such a class act on board, and I'm sure her success and profound knowledge of the game will help to promote the positive image of Women's World Cup around the world."
I can't imagine there is a female Joey Barton. Do you know what I mean?
No, exactly.
There was that one
player in the college football who got busted for wrestling from the floor and stuff, wasn't there?
Yeah.
She got banned for a considerable amount of time for that.
Stick it on Ramble too. It's a horrible clip. But,
that's right. Mia Hamm, when she was very young, she actually had some problems with her legs because she was born with a partial club foot.
Oh, right.
Now, someone born like that, you wouldn't think would go on to be the greatest goal scorer in the history of the football.
It's a bit annoying that she's born with a club foot and is 20 times better than me at football.
Yeah. It
20 might be a conservative.
Yeah, probably is. The first time that came to my head.
Didn't happen to Lord Byron. He had a club foot. He couldn't play football.
Terrible first touch.
There you go. So she had to wear casts on her feet, but she soon recovered and,
and the women's game was better for it.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Throughout her childhood, they had to move around a lot because her father was in the Air Force. Now, I say that because they lived in Italy for a little while, and that's where she says that she saw what football is all about. She saw the Italian passion for the game. And this was only when she was very young, about 6 years old. And that's where she got the bug for the beautiful game. So she moved back to Texas with the family and started playing for a local side. She was called up by the US women's team at the age of 15, becoming the youngest player ever to play for them. And by the time she'd finished high school, she was a constant fixture in the team, which is incredible.
It's not when Andy Orford got called up to the Pompey squad at the age of 15 back in the early 90s.
That's right, yeah.
I'm sure we were thinking that.
She also went to the University of North Carolina. like with Christine Lilly, and she was
yonk.
She was in there. Imagine that if you were a good player for other teams, you'd be like, "Oh, those two are just clean up." The rest of them
be like playing for the year above or something.
That's right. In 91 at 19, she was the youngest team member in history to win the World Cup. I mean, that was of course a part of the team with Lilly, but slightly younger than Lilly, so she gets the record there. In 95, when she'd finished studying university, she finished third at the World Cup. And there was a great moment that that people remember where she went to play as goalkeeper because there was no one left to play that position. That, you know, when we talk about, isn't it great to see an outfield player go?
Jackie Elka.
She went in goal. So she's all about the team. And they finished third in that World Cup. But she was voted the most valuable player of that World Cup. And as I said, with Lily, she also won the gold medal in 96. She won the US Female Athlete of the Year 5 years in a row in the mid to late 90s, and she was the most recognised female soccer player in the world, and she broke the all time international scoring record for men and women in 1999 against Brazil with her 108th career goal.
Wow.
Whose title did she take with that 108th?
Christine Lilly.
Ali Dai.
Because
he was 107 goals, isn't he?
He was, yeah.
In 99, Nike named the largest building on their corporate campus after her. Probably nothing to do with Gary Cook.
No.
America won the Women's World Cup in 1999. That was, the final was in front of 90,000 people in the Rose Bowl. And in 1999, she also founded the Mia Hamm Foundation, which is dedicated to bone marrow.
That was the iconic celebration.
Going back to the final.
Yeah, I was just saying, when they won it, she whips her top off and starts swinging it around, and she sunk to her knee.
Was that her, was it?
That was Mia Hamm, yeah.
Right, I remember that, yeah. Yeah, in 1999, she founded the Mia Hamm Foundation, which is dedicated to bone marrow research after her brother died of that disease. So, doing some good stuff off the field as well.
Yeah.
A lot of these American female soccer players, they do a lot of good stuff off the field.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the kind of missing the point to a certain extent. I think, I'm not having a pop at you, Mark. But I'm just saying, like, that every female soccer player is a role model to young girls.
Yep.
But a decent player is of more value, I think, in that game than role models, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
And they're both decent players.
That's right.
That's a good point.
They won the 2004 Olympics, the US women's team. She was a big part of that. And she was chosen by her fellow US Olympians to carry the American flag at the Athens closing ceremonies, which is some accolade.
Yeah, that's
the US Olympic team.
They're not short of a few athletes, are they?
Yeah, no. Absolutely. And she, well, and this is harking back to what you said about Christine Lilly. She retired in 2004 to start a family.
Yeah.
At the age of 34, I think she was. She's one of two women, Michelle Akers, who's another great American player as well. She, one of two women who was put on FIFA's list of the 125 greatest living soccer players. Only two women and two Americans, which were the two women, got on that. That's an incredible achievement.
It really is.
Absolutely. She also won the FIFA Women's Soccer Player of the Year twice in 2001, 2002. She would have probably won that more, but it was started in 2001.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah. So she retired with 158 international goals at the age of 32.
158.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
That's 51 more than Ali Day.
Yeah. Incredible.
That's sad.
And that is maths.
Yeah, maths in action.
I shall end with a quote from Mia Hamm. She said, "You can't just beat a team. You have to leave a lasting impression in their minds so that they never want to see you again."
That's superb.
Imagine it's scared of her.
Come on in, ladies. Yeah. Come on
welcome,
in.
Welcome.
If we were to get her and Lionel Messi to mate,
yeah, that would be
would there be some sort of super player afterwards?
One word of advice to the two ladies coming into the Dean Windows on the phone: stay away from Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah, glorious stuff. Am I right in thinking that in the logo for US women's soccer, they actually have Mia Hamm's silhouette?
Oh, is that right?
I think that's
the case. Is there
the
anything
case
she hasn't done?
Yeah, it's incredible.
It might have been better to list the stuff she hasn't done.
Yeah.
It'd be quicker.
She's not a Mia Hamm. She's not merely a ham. She's more than a ham. More than a warm ham. More than a warm ham to me.
Yeah. More than a warm ham? Is that what
than a warm ham?
That profile was incomplete without that. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of this week's Football Ramble Lols. I hope you've had a lovely time. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com.
I don't think you should be assuming people are lolling.
Well, we did.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
We had fun, even if you lot existed.
We had some lols.
Free to talk.
And the website is thefootballramble.com. Lots of wonderful things there. RambleTube, blogs. Oh, it's a joy.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
Yeah.
Betway predictions, gentlemen.
I went for an Arsenal-Wolves draw. I think Arsenal are going to be neck-haired from their midweek excursions.
Against Barcelona.
This is coming from the man who predicted Barcelona to draw at Mallorca. That didn't happen.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
James, who have you gone for?
I've gone for Birmingham to get a draw with Liverpool.
Ooh.
Because they're doing well at home. Liverpool, they're playing well at Anfield, but they're not so good on the road. So, I reckon that's what's going to happen.
Don't play on the road.
Luke.
I'm departing from the greatest and most exciting league the world has ever known.
Okay.
To go for Milan to beat Cagliari, even though I've since said I fancy Roma for the title. When I did the bit of prediction earlier, I fancied Milan. So
I'm going for United to beat Chelsea.
Ooh, controversial. Oh,
people have we've avoided that fixture. You've gone straight in there.
Yeah,
waded in
into the lion's den.
Like
the Christian you are.
Something we should say. Thank you very much.
If you would like to peruse our bets further and perhaps even have a tickle yourself, it's betway.com/thefootballramble.
Pervert.
We had a match recently, six-a-side match.
Yeah, it was good.
We got our fitnessbox.co.uk kits out.
Yeah, and we beat Tom Goulding's team of merry listeners. I think it was 12-8.
12-8.
Potentially 12-7.
They were a good side. They had us on the ropes for
it. They were a lot better than the first time we played them, as I recall. But I think there was a lot more room for skill.
Yeah. I liked your skills, Pete. You scored three goals.
I scored three goals, yeah. Let's not forget that.
That's right, yeah. And we had Tim with the wand watching on.
We did, yeah.
And the young man in goal for us.
Oh, yeah. He came all the way down from Nottingham. He got half hour late.
He come from Nottingham?
But
he was going off on holiday the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair. So he was in London anyway.
So that's many thanks. And to be fair, he did a great job.
He was brilliant.
He's bloody good. He looked like a keeper as well. I wouldn't like to face him.
Tom Mortimer. He's only 17. If he's that good when he's 17, imagine what he's going to be like when he's 18.
Get him on,
better.
Get him on that plane.
Yeah.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, James or Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. We're all off to jump in the golden bin. Cheers. Comments like that are going to keep us here till late.
That's a great teacher's put down. You know? That's so good. That's the best telling off.
It's your own time you're wasting.
And she was a part of that, the World Cup in 99 when... Do you remember when the Rose...
Yes! Oh, Pete.
Sorry. Carry on.
Fuck's sake.
Let me jump.
Sorry.
Sammy Obi as well.
Which one, though?
There's three of them.
Yeah.
It's a bloody good finish, I'm sure.
You sure?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.